JC Corcoran Podcast.
Well, it's May, and that means high school graduation is right around the corner. But we want to make sure that another group of graduates are not forgotten. The people who earn their GED. Here with his own personal story of triumph on the general equivalency diploma is Mr. Jorge Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fallon. When I began to study for the GED, I was a father of four. My back had just gone out, and I lost my job at the post office. Nobody will hire me. Not UPS, not Federal Express, not DHL, not,
What, like Airborne Express?
Airborne Express. I couldn't even get a job delivering pizza. Not at Pizza Hut. Not at Domino's. Little Caesar. Not at,
Papa John's.
No, I didn't apply at Papa John's.
All right, John. We got whatever. Keep going.
So, anyway, I took the GED. And I failed it. I failed science. I failed math. I failed
English.
Yeah, I failed everything.
Okay, yep.
Then I got serious about it and I took it again. But I failed it again. So I sat down and I said to myself, get real. You gotta pass this test.
Yeah.
I got super serious and I studied my head off. And I still failed. I still failed.
But you failed three times?
No, I failed five times. Then I said, I'm gonna take this thing one last time. And my friend Pepe told me that he passed by putting the letter C for every answer.
And then you passed.
No, my friend Pepe was wrong.
Why are you here?
I'm looking for Pepe. Anybody know Pepe? Anybody? Don't worry. Don't worry, Jimmy Fallon. I'm gonna get Pepe. Your ass is grass, and I'm the lawnmower. I'm the Toro. I'm the Honda. I'm the John Deere. I'm the Snapper.
That's enough. Jorge Rodriguez, everyone.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that. Inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. 192 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? You're at JCOnTheLine.com. I'm JC, and here we go with the heat. Again, we are going to be breaking records here the next couple of days. Records right around like 90, 91, and it's probably going to break that today and again tomorrow. It's really funny with all of the discussion about the Blues, who continued the series in Minnesota tonight. I think yesterday I said that the Blues could wrap it up, and it's like wishful thinking. I'm not paying attention here. It's the best of seven, of course. But anyhow, it's probably a good thing that they're playing in Minnesota because, you know, you get this kind of heat. How do I explain this? Okay, so I worked at an AM radio station back in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1979 and 1980, and we had the broadcast rights to the Grand Rapids Owls, the International Hockey League team. And if you're thinking to yourself, who is sitting at home listening to amateur hockey on radio? That would be a very, very good question, because at the time, I wasn't sure I understood who those people were either. In that arena, that the Owls play. And you had like Saginaw, Fort Wayne. I think Columbus had a team that went out of business at that time, right in the middle of the season. But imagine that, amateur hockey in Ohio, not a giant hit. So anyhow, this building, not exactly the Sky Trade Center, okay? And it was a dump. And the problem was that on really, really hot nights, so we're primarily talking the spring, right about this time of year, fog would start to come up. And just, you couldn't tell when it was going to happen. It just would. All of a sudden, they'd be playing, and all of a sudden, you couldn't see anything. And both teams emptied onto the ice and skated around in a big circle, which dissipated the moisture in the building and made the fog go away. And then everybody went and sat back down on the bench, and they continued the game. My partner and I, we were running that station in Grand Rapids, a guy by the name of Don Davis out of Chicago. We hired a then 22-year-old kid out of Michigan State, fresh out of college, to do the play-by-play for the Grand Rapids Owls. And I sat in the gondola with this guy, and I produced the games, meaning we played back, you know, the highlights between periods and stuff like that. I did all of that. It was crazy, too, the way he had to do it, because the technology that exists now, it's a walk in the park. But back then, you had to have a whole stack of cassettes. And when somebody would, you'd be recording the game. And as soon as somebody would score a goal, you'd hit the stop button, pop the cassette out, and then set it and put a little label on it. This was before Post-it notes. And you'd do that. And then between periods and going, all right, then in the, at the 14-minute mark, you know, John Flesch came along and passed to Guido Tenisi, and here's how it sounded. And I would stick the cassette in and play it. It would be all queued up, and you would be able to hear the highlight. That's how primitive that stuff was. But then again, I just told you the players had to skate around in a circle to dissipate the fog in the arena. But that announcer I'm referring to is a guy by the name of Pat Foley. And Pat eventually segued from the Grand Rapids Owls directly to the Chicago Blackhawks, where he's been supplying the play-by-play first on radio and then on their pay-per-view television thing. And he's had that job since the middle 80s. So after almost 40 years in the league, he is in the National Hockey League Hall of Fame. And we hired him all the way back in 1979. Anyhow, just in that little scenario I described for you, I mentioned a name of Guido Tenisi. I got two Guido Tenisi stories. He played with the Grand Rapids Owls, big, tall, blonde guy. He was in Slapshot. And there's a scene probably maybe about halfway through the movie where all the players are attending a big party. And Guido is a big, tall, handsome, blonde guy. And he comes walking in with two 15s on each arm. Okay, and just comes walking into the party. He's in the scene for a couple of seconds, and that's it. But, you know, he made it in the movie, all right? So then, one day we're shooting a TV commercial, and what was supposed to happen is I'm standing on the ice, and I talk about what a great radio station WLAV is, and, you know, plus we have Grand Rapids Owls games, and we have this timed out so that Guido is off, he's out of the shot. And just as I start talking about the Grand Rapids Owls, he skates up, sprays me with, you know, ice shavings, tosses me a puck, and then skates off, and I deliver one more line. Pretty cool commercial, actually. And, you know, you do these things, you do like, you know, 25 takes. And my friend Don thought it would be funny if on one of the takes, he said, all right, on this take, when you skate up to him, knock him over. So instead of just like stopping short and hitting him with the ice shavings, on this take, knock him over. See, but the problem is when an amateur hockey player, especially one with the name of Guido, hears somebody say knock him over, to him, it means put him in the hospital. And that's what he did on one take. He just plastered me, and I never saw it coming, so you don't have time to sort of like tense up or anything. That was about the time I started having back problems, and I think it did all start on that day when we were shooting that TV commercial. But the Blues will have slightly better playing conditions up in Minnesota tonight. Yesterday, I was talking about the fact that I'm irritated that people talk about, oh, what a great ballpark, maybe the most beautiful ballpark in all of baseball out in San Francisco, where the Cardinals played the Giants over the weekend and lost all three games. As I said yesterday, you can't count the outside. You can't count with, you know, the bay and all. That's not part of the ballpark. That doesn't make the ballpark beautiful. That makes the neighborhood, if you will, beautiful. And I forgot when I was talking about my criticism of Oracle Park in San Francisco yesterday that it's also freezing ass cold. Were you watching that game or any of those games this weekend? People were wearing Arctic parkas and gloves. They're wearing gloves at a baseball game the first week of May. There's a story, and Ted, if you're listening, you're so good at this. Our buddy Ted Williams, who is one of our soccer aficionados along with Tom Schwartz on 590. The Fan, been doing a soccer show there for like, is it 30 years? It's at least 25. Ted's a great resource on the show. He'll look stuff up and everything. But there was a story. I'm trying to get this verified, and I can't seem to find any verification of it. But supposedly there was a game at Candlestick, which is the ballpark that the Giants played in before they built this new place. And I say new, but the place is probably 20 years old already. And I'm going to talk about time warping here again in just a minute. But anyhow, it's like Jim Edmonds was doing a great job talking about how screwy the ballpark is in the outfield. He said, you look up and there's three flags, and all three of the flags are blowing in different directions. Think about that for a minute. And the ball was blowing all over the place. And, you know, they have problems like that at Wrigley and other ballparks. But it's especially bad at Oracle Park. And the story is, though, that the old Candlestick ballpark, there's a pitcher standing on the mound. There's a runner on third base. And he went into his set. But the wind came along and blew him off the mound, which was technically a balk. And the runner came in from third, and the Giants lost the game, or one of the two teams lost the game. Now, I heard that story years and years and years ago, and I'm still trying to get it verified. I sure hope it's true, because that's a great story, and I'd like to see more of them. Oh, I was talking about the time warp. John Hewlett does a fine job on Casey's weekends on Sunday, where he does the Casey Classic show. It's a bit too esoteric for me, but I know a lot of people like it. And he got criticized last week for playing a song from 1989. And the guy was on Facebook yapping at him going, come on, John, how can a song be a classic from 1989? Because, you know, he wants all that stuff from the 60s and 70s. But this is where it's funny, because people, as they start getting older, forget how old they really are. Do you know what 1989 was? That was 33 years ago. And if a song that is 3.3 decades old isn't an, you know, quote unquote oldie, or in their case a classic, then what are we talking about here? Like I said, people are older than they think. And then you find out Fred Savage, the little kid on the Wonder Years, is 45 years old. Yes, we're older than we think we are. These guys that make up that audience are like, give me my JD Blackfoot or give me death. So on these escapees, you know, everybody was speculating as to what the hell happened. You know, and initially you figure, okay, this guy duped her somehow. And then you find out that she had handed in her resignation papers because she was going to retire the day before this happens. But I still thought that he had conned her to the point where as soon as she got him out of there, he would, quote unquote, dispose of her. But at least it hadn't happened yet. And what was it, about a 10-day long escape, something like that? Anyhow, I guess there was some sort of high-speed chase. They caught them both yesterday. She shot herself and hung on for a couple of hours, but she died overnight. A short retirement. There's one less racist and one less bigot in the world today as Bob Romanek. And if that name means nothing to you, then you haven't been paying attention to some of these goofy AM stations in St. Louis. This is the guy, and as soon as I start telling the story, you'll go, oh, okay, I remember hearing about this guy. But he used to be a law enforcement officer in Sauget. Somehow ended up with millions of dollars and some sort of financial scandal and all sorts of stuff over in Illinois years ago. They sent him to prison, got out of prison, still had all the money, and bought a couple of radio stations over in Illinois, these AMs that nobody ever really pays attention to. They're there. They're broadcasting every day to who? I don't know. People who only have like one AM clock radio in their entire home. And I guess those people feel disenfranchised. And then you have the decision to make as a broadcaster. What will my content be? I have this radio station. What will I do with it? And in the case of Bob Romantic, he unloaded some of the most legendary filth, bigotry, homophobia, and all sorts of just awful stuff every single day, using the N-word, giving out people's home addresses. You know, he was running for political office, and so he figures, okay, I'm going to give out the home address of one of my competitors, you know, stuff like that. Gay guy over there running for some sort of local office, and, you know, out come all of the, you know, homophobic jokes, quote-unquote jokes. And so when he died over the weekend, everybody pretty much had the same conclusion that I just had, and that is there's one less bigot and racist and just awful, awful person left in the world. He's dead now. However, there was one exception that I saw, and that was from one of his former employees who showered Bob Romantic with praise, admiration, and stuff like that. And that person doling that out was none other than Kevin Slayton. You draw your own conclusions. Speaking of racist diatribes, it was on this date in 1993 that Stephen DC's racial diatribe was spewed out over the airwaves. We all know where that got them. 1986 on this date was my first Casey kite fly. I was still an employee of that radio station at the time, and it was sort of weird because things were quite different back then. Now, one company can own six radio stations, so somebody who might have been your competitor a couple of years ago now works down the hall from you. And so that whole competitive spirit has really been deterred in recent years, but it used to be a lot of fun. And one of the things you would always do is you'd find out that somebody was doing a promotion in the park, you know, like the kite play. And so your competitor would show up and try to give away bumper stickers and stuff like that. And you'd try to chase them off the property. And in this particular case, KWK, which was Casey's competitor at that time, Close was working over there. And they showed up and set up a little kiosk with a bunch of kites with KWK on them. And I figured, I don't see anybody over there that's bigger than me. And I was feeling a little wild-eyed back in those days. And so I just took a, when somebody says, I hauled off and powdered him. That phrase, haul off. What does that mean? It basically means you get a running start. And that's what I did. I got this running start, and I just did a barrel roll right into their kiosk at their table. And then I just grabbed each of the KWK flags and fistfuls of them, just broke them all over my knee, and nobody stopped me, and I was being cheered on, and I just kept breaking them, and I just left them with a big mess full of broken balsa wood and paper and destroyed KWK logos all over the place, and then I walked away, and they cheered me. And I have a great picture of that, too. I put it on Facebook today, but I'm in Facebook jail right now. As you can tell, I'm devastated. It was comedian Richard Jenny at Westport on this date back in 1991. I graduated college on this date back in 1975. But you know what? Back in those days, you just had the big football field, and there were like 4,000 people graduating that day. And so you didn't even get to go up on stage. They didn't mention your name or anything like that. Charge $150. That was a lot of money back in 1975. $150 is like $550 now. And they're like, it's your rental fee for the cap and gown. And then you sit out there on a hot football field, bunch of dull speeches. And then at some point they go, College of Liberal Arts. And like 1,000 people would stand up and just wave. And that was that. And I was like, fuck that. What's the point in any of that? And my decision not to attend my college graduation was complicated by the fact that at the Airy Crown Theater, McCormick Place in Chicago, on that particular evening was a performance by, and again, this is 1975, a performance by Dan Fogelberg opening for the Eagles. And guess what I did? I grabbed my girlfriend at the time, my roommate at the time, and his girlfriend, and we drove into Chicago. Instead of going to my graduation, we went to Chicago, and we saw that concert, and to this date, still one of the best all-time concerts I have ever seen in my life. And back on this date in 1990, in conjunction with the grand opening of Planet Hollywood, the lovely Leah Thompson from Caroline in the City, a little thing called Back to the Future. Plus, she worked with Tom Cruise in a movie called All the Right Moves. She was in town, and I interviewed her at Planet Hollywood on this date back in 1990.
All right, now, anybody who wants to kind of examine your hip quotient need only go back about 2 weeks. It's kind of like a crown jewel on anybody's resume. You were on the Larry Sanders Show. How did that happen?
Not only that, Larry Sanders was on my show, Caroline in the City. I don't know. It was really, he just asked me, and I was shooting my show, and he's on the same lot. So they just get me in a golf cart, and I'd go over and shoot a show. And then we said, would you be on our show? And he was like, yeah, it was fun. You're fun. You're nice. So it was pretty groovy. He's very, there's a whole different energy in that show than in a normal kind of situation comedy, which really it is a situation comedy, but it's a whole different energy about it, and it was really fun. I like him. He makes me laugh. I always see him at awards shows when we're backstage, and he just makes me laugh. Yeah.
First movie I ever saw you in was All the Right Moves. You and Tom Cruise were babies. You were just like children in that movie. You couldn't have known back then that you would have a fabulous movie career and that Cruise would turn into what he turned into. What do you remember about that period in your life and your career and maybe the days of making that movie, which for a lot of people, present company included, was the first time we ever saw you?
Well, that movie was a wonderful movie because it was really a character piece, and I learned a lot from Tom Cruise because he had done a few movies before, but he wasn't a star he wasn't a big star.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is it was a movie about high school athletics and about high school, but without that stupid kind of Porky's mentality to it. It was like, an intelligent script and a real story, and, people who look back at that movie now say, that was a very good piece of work.
Thank you. That's a really nice compliment. We tried really hard. We tried to make a serious... we tried to really examine the problems of these people in a steel mill town and be really empathetic about it. And Tom Cruise was the hardest, and still is, the hardest working actor I've ever had the pleasure of working with.
Now, that's interesting because of all the different ways we think of Tom Cruise, I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe him as the hardest working. That's very interesting.
He works really hard. He's very intense and he's very concentrated and he's... he just puts himself through the ringer, and he, he doesn't lighten up too much, at least at that point. I don't know what he's like anymore, but I still get the feeling he's like that now. And I learned a lot about his dedication. He had a lot of concentration. Very impressive.
You got yourself a hit TV show, Caroline in the City. And as big a hit as the show is, with all the different things that you have kind of making up your resume, when your career is said and done, will it still be Back to the Future as kind of that pinnacle?
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, I love that movie, but I hope I have a couple of them. But you don't get that many great parts. I've had just a handful, and you never know when it's going to happen. And you just always hope for another one, And I think there's one or two more for me. It's interesting, though, because my name was Leah Back to the Future Thompson, and now it's kind of Leah Caroline in the City Thompson. Yeah. I've got a new middle name.
Sure. So. And we had Michael J. Fox in St. Louis a couple of years ago when he was doing promotion for Doc Hollywood. And everybody asked the same question. How can you make 3 Back to the Future movies with everybody from the original cast in it except Crispin Glover? Now, we know that Crispin is a couple of bricks short of being a full load, but, Michael never gave me a direct answer. So how can you help me understand why Crispin was in the original movie and then we never saw him again after that?
Well, I think that there was some, creative differences. I loved him. I loved him in the first movie. I thought he was just absolutely brilliant. And I just think that he was really difficult to work with. And some people don't mind that, and some people can't put up with it. And we had a whole year of shooting Back to the Future 2 and 3, and I can see how they would be the certain, you know, they just, Zemeckis didn't want to put up with it. It wasn't good for me because they couldn't write for me then. So,
you know, initially when I was putting the show together today, I didn't really plan on playing that long a clip from that interview. But the more I listened to it, it's like, that's really interesting because that was a big show. And, you know, you got somebody who's in a movie with Tom Cruise and then, you know, the Back to the Future trilogy and all that. It's like, that's worth hearing. That's worth hearing. And she's delightful and very, very cute. Tiny little person, but really, really pretty and very nice. A woman gave birth to a baby boy during a Metallica concert on Saturday night in Brazil. She went into labor during their encore set and had her son during Enter Sandman. They're doing that Dirty Dancing sequel, going to be set in the 90s. Jennifer Grey's baby, returning to Kellerman's, Patrick Swayze will have some sort of presence in the film. They're not explaining exactly how that is going to work. Late night tonight, while Stephen Colbert is still out, he was showing signs of COVID again. He had COVID, and, you know, he was off for a week. Then he came back, and now he's got COVID again. So, no Colbert. Jimmy Kimmel's got Zac Efron. Mandy Moore pops up with Jimmy Fallon. James Corden is Rebel Wilson. And Drew Barrymore is on with Seth Meyers. Joe Rogan has lost the title of number one podcast on Spotify. A Batman podcast knocked him off. Of course, here, the J.C. Corcoran podcast in the top 10 of all podcasts in the country. They're also doing a sequel to Father of the Bride. This one's going to be with Gloria Estefan and Andy Garcia, HBO Max on June 16th. I don't like that idea. Ray Romano is going to star in a biopic about legendary college hoops coach Jim Valvano. Could see him doing that. Netflix is going to be airing some of the stand-up sets from the Netflix is a Joke Fest, but not Dave Chappelle's. They also announced the Bob Saget tribute is going to be on June 10th. That is on Netflix. A U.S. representative from New Jersey wants to break up Live Nation's monopoly. The people who provide the concerts and run the shows and everything out at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater and all the really, really big ones. No, they haven't gotten Ticketmaster yet. I can't understand how they're going after Live Nation. All right, birthdays today. Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live is 44. Young MC, busting a move at 55. Linda Evangelista, that was the model who said, we don't wake up. Well, she said, I don't get out of bed for less than $10,000 a day. She's 57 today. I bet you she gets out of bed now for less than $10,000. Bono is 62. Rick Santorum, and I love this description, a politician with a Google problem, is 64 today. Chris Berman, 67. Dave Mason, we just disagree, 76. Donovan, Mr. Mellow Yellow, Sunshine Superman, 76. Season of the Witch, too. And Pat Summerall was born on this date in 1930. Former NFL kicker turned broadcast legend.
You seem to be the first guy, if not the first, one of the first, to let the analysts be more of a player in the broadcast than the play-by-play guy. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think when I first started, and I was an analyst to begin with, when I first started, the analyst didn't have the weapons that he has now. There was no such thing as instant replay. You couldn't go back and review. If you thought the official made a mistake, he made a mistake, and you just there was no means that the analyst now has, and it was more regimented at that time. When I first started to work as an analyst, and let's say I was working with Jack Buck, it was sort of an unwritten law that when the team broke the huddle, that time belonged to the play-by-play man. And he described what was happening, the action, until the ball was dead, until the play was over. And then, while the team was in the huddle, that was the analyst's time. And that was sort of the way it was regimented. As the analyst got more tools, the instant replay, the isolated cameras, the drawing on the screen, what have you, then the analysts need more time. And that's what's happened, I think. The play-by-play man has become less of a part of the broadcast than the analyst. It's an analyst-oriented broadcast now, I think.
Well, those were classic days where you had Madden and Summerall in the booth. Not that the guys who are doing the jobs now aren't good, but boy. You don't realize how much you miss something like that until it's gone. And by the way, they broke up Pat Summerall and Jack Buck. some network suit said, we got to split you up. And he's like, why? We sound great to go. He goes, yeah, but you sound so alike, I can't tell who's talking. And so they split up Pat Summerall and Jack Buck. True story. All right, tomorrow we're going to get into this Sheryl Crow documentary, which I watched in its entirety last night. And I have a lot to say about it, but we'll do that tomorrow. So that's a little tease. And I am such a little tease. But that's it for today. Oh, is there anything else? I'm feeling like I'm forgetting something. Oh, Boeing moving their headquarters from Chicago. The fact the CEO was shot while making the announcement probably had something to do with it. And with that, that's it for the J.C. Crockman podcast for Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. 192 days remaining in our American democratic system. As we have noted, we are here every weekday morning right about this time. You may email me at jc@jconline.com. Facebook the Showgram with J.C. Crockman. Help spread the word. Everything is archived here. If you miss a podcast and we only do politics when it is absolutely unavoidable, go Blues! And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Crockman Podcast.